Brian Dew.
Don't clap beforehand.
Okay, so this is, I'm Brian from the University of Copenhagen. And this presentation is called Is Google Glass Interfering with the Turn-Taking System? And this is an EMC analysis of the use of glass, which is Google Glass in short, just glass, in social interaction in quasi-experimental settings, and I will return to that. And this is work in progress because I have just received the glass for half a year ago, and then I've tried them out, and I've tried to use them in different situations, and I've had participants use them in different situations and so on. So this is still very much work in progress, and I really like any comments you might have on this matter. So what is Google Glass? This is Google Glass. I can put them on. I don't want to wear them all the time. But this is a computer for the face, just like putting your smartphone on your face. And it has been sold in US and UK, and that is the only place in the world. They are still prototype technology, and so you cannot go out and buy them, but you can apply for them and stuff like that. So they have been on the market in different versions since 2012, and they are still prototypes, but there are not many of them in the world. And just brief explanation of how they work. So I have this optic element in here, which projects an image in front of me like this. It's like putting a screen like the size of your hand in front of you, and I have information here, just like smartphone information. I can make a Google search, and I can check calendar and email, and I can get all sorts of notification, and it's app-based, just like smartphones, and I can download all kinds of apps to this, a Facebook app and Twitter app and stuff like that. So this is a smartphone, or a very strong computer, really, for your face, and you can use it for all kinds of purposes. The Google goal is to make this something that everyone is wearing, because then Google will make a lot of money, of course. And other companies, as this picture shows, Google is not the only one producing this kind of technology, this kind of new product category. There are many different kinds of products on the market already, and there are all the big companies are producing prototypes at the moment. So we will probably see this kind of technology around us in 3-5 years. And you say no, but probably many of you said no when the smartphone arrived 10 years ago or something like that, 5 years ago. So this is something to discuss. At least it is interesting to whether they will be around or not. Some people are going to wear them, and it is interesting to see and to explore how they are used in social interaction. So that is why I was motivated to look at this in the first place as a social interaction analysis, CA analysis. So I won't go too much into the details. I have constructed three types of data or situations with regards to collecting data, because as I said, no one is really wearing them all the time at the moment, and it's almost impossible to collect data in the wild. So what is the second best? This is some kind of quasi-experimental data. I have worked with several students in different classes trying to figure out how to look at this kind of product. One situation I have filmed students in conversation about an exhibition. It doesn't matter what they talk about, they just have to talk about something that is natural to them in an ordinary university room, and they are this kind of natural language use. Another kind of situation I have filmed is students in conversation about traveling and their studies. And this is filmed in an experimental lab, which looks like, of course, there are technology in the lab, but there are also furniture, and it kind of reminds of people's homes. And there are four cameras, so it's in a lab. And I have recording paramedics trying to use this technology in situations where they are simulating the situation coming out in a patient's home and trying to help the sick people in their home, and then to use an app which was designed for Google Glass, which is an app that could scan medicine. So when the paramedics arrive at people's home, they wear this, and they can use it for all different kinds of purposes. But in this situation, they would pick up the medicine laying around, and they would say, Google, scan this, and it would scan it and provide information to the paramedics. and this was tested as a authentic kind of role play situation. So these are the three kind of instances that I have been working with. And of course, we need to consider this kind of data as what it is, because it's not real life situations like going out in the wild, but it's, on the other hand, not really experimental data, so it's something in between. And so we have this quasi-experimental methodology and some considerations regarding this. Of course, the problem is, as I said, only a few is in San Francisco and area, Bay Area, are practically no one in the rest of the world is actually using smart glasses in everyday life yet. And also users are novices versus the expert way of using glass. So this is, of course, always an issue with technology. There are huge differences between being an expert, knowing how to use them in a natural way, and just being a novice, putting them on and being very reflective about using them. So there are huge differences between these kinds of situations. Of course, optimal, that is natural occurring interaction in the wild. Second best, what is practical possible, plus a lot of ethnographic observations and all kinds of literature study and whatever can enhance and provide the study with knowledge and information. So I did this pilot study with the three cases, which was these different quasi-experimental settings. Participants are gathered with the purpose of using glass and social interaction, but they are not told to do anything specific. So they are not told to say this or do that or whatever, but they are told to be at a specific point at a specific time and to just have some kind of interaction with glass. And so the people who use glass, they were instructed in how to use glass, the technology and how, what kind of apps they could use, and they were instructed to just use glass as naturally as they could. Just like, imagine you, what would you do with your smartphone in this kind of situation? You would check calendar, or maybe you would check an SMS, and stuff like that. And just try to do them as naturally as possible. So this was the way I tried to gather data. And of course, we can discuss this natural conceived thing for a long time, and it's rather really complicated. But I'm following Garfinkel and Lynch with the notion of naturally organized ordinary activities. That is an ordering of activity that is spontaneous, local, or autochthonous, temple, embodied, endogenously produced and performed as a matter of course. That is, the interaction that people are doing is not guided in any specific ways. It is naturally, although the setting might be some way controlled. So just a little research positioning. There's of course a lot of computer studying, computer programming and Internet of Things and stuff like this. And then there is the human-computer interaction way of looking at smart glasses, and these are the guys, the pictures, Steve Mann and Thad Starner, or the other way around, Thad Starner and Steve Mann. Those are the guys who invented this kind of technology in the beginning of the 90s, and they have both been wearing this kind of technology, face-mounted, heads-up display kind of technology, since 93 or 94. And at the moment, Thad Starner is the chief development at Google, so they are part of this big movement. And when you look at smart glass, they have written a lot about this kind of technology from the human-computer interaction perspective. But this is to look at the interface design. How is the user interacting with the technology? And that is of course interesting. But what I want to look at is how is technology a part of social life? Social interaction, and that is a different perspective. And no one has looked at this, as far as I know, because obviously it's a new technology. But so I'm looking at it from the ethnology and conversation analysis way, and no one has done that before. But there is, of course, previous studies in similar kind of technologies, like for instance the smartphone, There has been some studies in the wild, use of smartphone in the wild, which are in some ways similar. And there is, of course, other types of technology use in the broad perspective, use of computers and stuff like that. Goodman formulating claims. We have Lof Hinmars and Heath, the whole workplace studies program. There's a lot of technology interpretation and how is technology used in social interaction. And Mandala has done a very nice piece on talking driving multi-activity, and of course Suchman and the human-machine configurations. There are many very interesting studies in this field. So, but of course, as I said, no one has looked at smart glasses. So I thought that could be interesting. What is there anything particular to say about smart glasses? So, and when you look at social interaction, you can look at all different kinds of things. I have in this talk prepared three themes that I just want to, and three examples. The one is progressivity, participants' difficulties determining what the next relevant action is, and there's the issue of multi-activity, which is, you can see, production of overlap, repair, and the problem of intentions simultaneously talk. And there's the thing about epistemics, participants' lack of understanding and the production of epistemic incongruences. So these are the three examples that I will look at. So progressivity, difficulty is determining what the next relevant action is. So the question, why that now? Classic question is, classic CA question is very much at stake in this kind of situation where one of the users, one of the participants are using glass because there's a lot of communication, interaction with the glass, and participants and members, a problem is, why that now? Trying to understand what is going on. And participants in everyday interactions show attention to the sequential context, thus projecting, for instance, what the next relevant action is. However, when a participant uses glass, this is exactly what may be challenged. Member's problem, what is the relevant next action in response to glass use? Okay, let's look at one short example. Sorry, I didn't bring the handouts, but I will provide you with a transcription just after this short clip. From the so this is one of the paramedics using glass in a situation coming out in a simulated situation, acting like a real paramedic, and how would he act in this kind of situation coming out in a person's house and somebody being sick?
Okay, glass. So will you recognize this?
Let's hold on.
Okay, glass. Recognize this. Jamen, nu kigger vi lige på hende, ikke også? Så skal vi nok finde ud af det. Okay, glass.
So this is the transcription. And I won't go through it because I don't have time for this, but just to focus on these lines 4, 5, 6, and 7. The pause in line 4, which is quite long, 5.2 seconds, is treated by Ib, which is the husband, acting like the husband. What do you think is wrong with her? He asks, and then Bo responds in line 6, "Okay, glass," and this is produced in overlap. So the okay glass is a response to the interaction with the glass. It is not a response to what to the utterance produced by Ib. On the other hand, Ib's utterance in line 5, "What do you think?" might be seen as a way of interpreting the pause in line 4 as a transition relevant place. So I can see on my own screen, I just have to read what I've written here. So the co-participant, the husband, treat the verbal silence, line 4, as a transition relevant place and takes a turn in line 5. Ib doesn't treat the glass use, which is a lot of embodied actions in the verbal pause. The line 4, he does the touching of the pad on the on the glass, it does like this, and it swipes down and up, a lot of embodied actions. But it doesn't treat the glass use as a turn, in the sequential organization of turn takings, but as a position for something else to happen, and as he self-selects and takes a turn. So he doesn't treat the interaction with the glass as something that has that needs to occupy space in interaction. So the rule of conditional relevance is challenged due to the ambiguity determining the interpretive environment. The way he responds is to treat the glass use as nothing to be treated. So he doesn't understand that it has to be treated somehow. Glass is treated by the glass user as a non-human participant in interaction. So as we have to respond to human participants' productions, he also have to respond to the interaction provided by glass. But this is not the case by the co-participant. Glass use is recognizable by the robotic staring. When I look at this screen, I will do something like this, and I will just look through people. And this is quite obviously in social interaction, but it doesn't seem to be treated like that all the time. But it doesn't help regarding projection. Co-participants to glass users have trouble determining the next relevant action as they do not know what kind of actions the glass user is doing with glass. Okay, so the second thing I wanted to look at is the issue of multi-activity. The production of overlap, repair, and the problem of intended simultaneously talk. That was also the case in the first example. You can see a lot of production of overlap, and I will just return to this in this example. Of course, many things are going on. There's the use of glass, talk, embodied actions, and use of other objects. And there are simultaneously actions, parallel actions, and side sequences occurs which produces overlap, repair initiations, and repair. Participants try to manage these in order to uphold the normal order of interaction. Okay, let's look at an example. So these are also students. These are students talking, and these are not from the experimental lab. These are just the university room.
Der er sådan noget, jeg skal få øjne i glas. Og det ved jeg ikke, men det er det, jeg tænker nu. Man synes også, at man har det.
Okay. I haven't time to play them more than once, but so it's of course difficult to get an idea, but the transcription like this. They are talking about SMCO Friday. This is some kind of exhibition, and Ida produces this in the line 24. Okay, glass, the command. The command to glass as a response to a glass interactional side sequence. This is because they have been talking about the relevance of taking a note with glass earlier on in this example. And so the okay glass in line 24 is a kind of response to that kind of talking. So the command to glass as a response to a glass interactional side sequence, but in overlap with social interaction. The co-participants shift gaze towards Ida and smile. They do this as Steve produces this okay glass out loud, and they just turn their head and look at her and smile, treating this like something that is unusual to do. Overlap as an interactional problem is treated by smiling repairs. He does this, accounting for the okay glass interruption. Sus projects herself as still next speaker by lifting index finger. And Ida responds with a quick pointing indicating the same. She does this in 5 minutes, okay. And then later on in 29, she gives command to glass as a, she does this in line 30, command to glass as a response to a glass interactional side sequence and still in overlap with social interaction but quickly produced. She says, take a note. And Sus responds with embodied withdrawal. She withdraws from the social interaction, like moving backwards. Anita responds quickly with the projection of Zeus as the next Roman speaker. She says in line 31, "Yes, what do you say?" So this is a way of managing going in and out of the social interaction, being a part of social interaction, and being a part of interacting with class at the same time, which is a very complicated matter. And she does a lot of work to do this, and it is actually almost impossible. But she managed to. In other cases, they really don't manage to. And we see people totally withdraw from interaction because it is so complicated to do this work. Okay, so I will, 5 minutes. Okay, I will just. Participants normally orient towards organized set of practices by which overlap is managed, one speaker at a time, that is the rule. So we have 3 types of overlap. In my data, we have a human participant gives class a command in overlap with ongoing talk. That was the example just provided. We have a human co-participant acts in overlap with the unrecognized feedback from class to the user. That was the case in the first example. And in the next third example, a non-human participant class provides information that affects social interaction because the class user suddenly takes a turn with the class provided information. And participation status is at stake when producing side sequences and moving between interacting with co-participants and the non-human participant. And there's a lot of identity work, of course. I won't go more into that. Because I just want to reach the last point about epistemics, which is the class information which is accessed during social interaction is not socially displayed or publicly available because the information is only available for me through the camera or through the display. So it's a private experience. Okay, just the last example here, just quickly.
Bifocal classes.
Nej, det
er det
ikke.
Det er en
hævet fra fordi. Okay, so, I just want to focus on this part. the pause in line 4 and self-initiated repair indicators, the hesitation in line 5, is treated as a transition level in place by Tom in line 6. And they gaze at Tom as he takes the turn, bifold the glasses, and before the closing, well, at line 7, Kim produces the second pair party, which is the answer to the question with the first pair part in which is not displayed in this example, thereby treating Tom's actions as out of context and related to something unknowable. So they do not know what Tom is talking about and what he is saying in line 6. He is responding to some kind of information he receives in class, and he is responding in social interaction, which is, of course, very asymmetrical in the situation, and he has a lot of information and knowledge they do not have. And they treat this as irrelevant and out of context, and they continue with their normal social interaction. So class use is treated as a private experience, which produces epistemic incongruences, and there is asymmetry. A shared mental model doesn't exist at the moment of how to behave regarding this kind of, And the perspectives and discussions, just very quickly. Glasswearing is at the moment a breaching experiment that challenges the social moral order. I've been wearing this kind of technology for a month, and it is really a breaching experiment to walk around with this kind of technology. So that's a side point. There's a need for the establishment of a locally shared mental model of what smart glasses is and can and how to be used, just like smartphone etiquette. Glasses, an extended mind, this is something that is more complicated. I haven't been talking a lot about it, but this is interesting to look at from the social cognition perspectives. How is this a part of my cognition and my thinking, and how is it extended? And where's the limitation between my cognition and extended cognition and all these kind of issues? They are very interesting. And of course, as I have tried to show, this is a non-human participant, which is a part of social interaction and kind of need to be treated as a non-human participant. Differences, of course, between novice and experts. Difference between work settings where glass may have a specific purpose and the consumer market and everyday social interaction. course there are differences. We may accept talking to glass in a work environment, but maybe not in a, in a private environment. There's a lot of problems about continuous partial attention, problematization of the whole interaction situation, no one really being a part of social interaction, but everyone talking to glass or something else. Problem with the alone together. The force of information in rich social interaction, so it, I can get all kind of information through this that can enrich interaction, like providing Google search and news and stuff like that, calendar, and it can enrich, of course, interaction. And there are many design issues. So this is it, and we only move forward, maybe in the future, very near future, we may have some kind of smart contact lenses. Google has also developed these. So what will happen when social interaction, when it is all computer processed? Thank you.
Thank you. Some time for chat. Yes, so I come from I'm in a computer science department, and lots of people are studying technology not at all in relation to human interaction. So I think it's really an interesting area, and there's so much that can be done in looking at this. I'm just wondering whether the metrics or the evaluation structures from HCI might not be useful in more task-oriented kinds of analysis. So like information retrieval, because there's all these mechanisms of human interaction that are about accomplishing specific and measurable tasks, and people have all these different strategies for accomplishing those, and the ways that these devices in intervening or intrude on those existing mechanisms, I think gives you a really nice kind of edge, especially when the rhetoric in how these are marketed is that they enhance and enable things which by and large they often break.
Exactly. That is interesting. And it's interesting that for instance, Google doesn't, didn't go out to a specific work environment where you can, it's easier to accept some kind of interaction with class, but really hits for the consumer market and imagines that everyone will be wearing them and it will enhance communication.
Yes, Joe.
Yeah. I'm sure you've probably got examples where they are absolutely completely in overlap, but those ones, they were kind of doing their okay glass and take a note, sort of not completely in overlap. They were waiting at least until near the end of somebody else's turn. And in the first one, I didn't have enough time to really see, but I think it was quite a long pause where he was trying to get the thing to read, to recognise it, and I think he kind of took it down when the person actually actually tried to ask what was wrong before he put it back up again. It was a bit difficult to tell because obviously I didn't see it much. But so I just wonder whether actually there might be something where people are trying to negotiate this in a sensible way. So they aren't. I mean, I'm only just going off the ones that you've shown.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering if you have somewhere they are completely in overlap and completely disconnected from what's happening.
No, and really that's interesting because it only proves the original turn-taking system, you know, because people don't do that. If they need to communicate or interact with the glass, they do some kind of withdrawal and hold back from the social interaction, and then maybe turn their head. They do a lot of communicative work to not problematize the disrupt the ongoing interaction. So really it is interesting how much work they do to try to fit this kind of parallel or side sequence interaction with a non-human participant into this the social interaction going on.
Okay, I think we'll have to stop it there and cross over. Thank you once again, Brian.